Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Philanthropy. I am Dave Garamella, your host and CEO of The Giving Collaborative. We are really excited about our guest this week for a number of reasons. She's going to be bringing forth an issue that we've been hearing since the beginning of the pandemic. How do we, you know, duplicate or replicate our amazing special events, keep our donors engaged? And she's done a little bit of both. She's kept her donors engaged. She's created an amazing event, but now the challenges are taking place. So just a little bit about yourself.
I'm Lorelei Matrani. I am the Director of Special Events for the Prevent Cancer Foundation. I have been working with them for a little over 4 years now and enjoying every minute of it. It's a great team. I started in the conference area of the foundation and have switched sort of to the more large-scale fundraising events and peer-to-peer fundraising. I have a background in the theater. I have both a BA in theater itself and then a master's in arts management, which I like to say is basically nonprofit management with just a little extra focus on the arts. And I work mainly on our gala and our 5K and with those beneficiary events that are coming through and people that are raising money for the foundation. I also earned my CMP last year, which I was very excited about. A great accomplishment in my mind to have been working full time and managed to get in those extra study hours. That's as well. And I work with Prevent Cancer Foundation. So we're a nonprofit that is focused on cancer prevention and early detection. We've been around, this is actually our 35th year anniversary.
Wow.
So we've got some things going on for that. We've got some new bold goals that are looking forward to the future, including trying to reduce cancer deaths by 40% by 2035. So we are looking ahead right now and working hard to meet that.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. I said it a little bit in our introduction. You know, the majority of our work is with plan giving, major giving, capital campaigns, kind of the traditional big ticket items to move a fundraising shop forward. But the reality is almost every not-for-profit kind of leans on events in different ways, but especially from a fundraising to raise a little bit of money, but to really kind of get the message across what their mission or their mandate is in a less formal way, in a way where you can kind of let down your hair and just relax. So critical piece of a comprehensive fundraising or philanthropy program, which is hard to put on in a normal year, right? Logistically and sponsorship wise, how the heck do you pull it off in the midst of a global pandemic where some states and at some points where, you know, you couldn't have more than maybe 5 or 6 people in a room and they had to be a your kind of close cohort. Would love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, and Prevent Cancer Foundation actually has some additional challenges in that it is very heavy on its events-based fundraising.
Okay.
So we really had to make sure that we were continuing to see the success with those, both with the events that we're planning ourselves, as well as our peer-to-peer fundraising and beneficiary events. And I think that we've had a great deal of success on both fronts. For example, on the beneficiary peer-to-peer side, we had our biggest fundraiser, which is Awesome Games Done Quick. It's a gaming speedrun marathon. That just happened in January, and it was fully virtual. Normally, it's about a 2,000-3,000 person in-person event.
Oh,
as well.
I did not know that. Okay.
As well as being streamed virtually all across the world. So it's kind of built to be a virtual event in that it already had a very strong virtual component, but there's a level of engagement that the foundation has with that organization to keep those donors excited about giving, that we had to find a way to continue with it being completely virtual. So we
And that is your largest fundraiser.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so we budgeted for a little bit lower, but actually ended up exceeding our expectations on what was raised. The donors were still very excited to give. We had this year, we had interviews with grant recipients of the foundation that they were being interviewed by the gamers. So I think that we found ways to keep them really excited about the work that the foundation was doing, and that was super helpful.
Did you see an uptick in registration because it was entirely virtual and there's been this kind of reliance on being home and streaming your favorite shows or playing your game, you know, your video games with your buddies?
For that event, I don't think that there was necessarily an uptick in registration. There were certainly still huge amounts of people that were watching. There were usually around 90, 100,000 or more people watching at any given time during that week. And it's lots of small donations that lead to a very large payoff for the foundation. So we raised 2.76 million from them this year, which was phenomenal.
I have to tell you, every time you share that, or Jody or Jennifer or anybody on the team over at Prevent Cancer Foundation, I always gulp, because that is just, it's absolutely, absolutely, and I don't know if maybe it's because of my age, or I just think that that is the most fascinating, fascinating thing and the most amazing thing. And I always want to cheer that. I just think it's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I want to ask you a question. Maybe this is kind of an illegal pitch, but is it harder to run an event virtually, or, you know, kind of the traditional, hey, let's send out the invites and get folks to come into whatever the venue is? You don't have to answer. I have my opinion. Would love to hear a pro's thoughts on that.
I think that it is equally difficult.
Okay.
Personally.
Okay.
For both options. I think with the virtual event, you do get maybe a little bit more work-life balance than you're getting when you're doing an in-person event. But there are still just as many challenges for each of those. And I think for this past year with our virtual gala, we had additional challenges in that it was something completely new to us. So maybe going forward, it would not be quite as hard of a lift to make happen. But we were very successful with that event. I think making the determinations in a timely manner and being decisive about that it was going to be a virtual event was very important for us. We had initially sort of, I guess, early March, decided to push it to September in the hopes that it would be in person. And then by early May, it seemed pretty clear that that was not going to be a reasonable option for us. So we decided to then move full steam ahead on the event as a virtual gala, which meant finding new platforms, new vendors to help make that happen. Sure. We were very lucky in that the videographer and producer that we hired was extremely dedicated to the cause and was willing to go above and beyond and sort of handhold us a little bit in making this happen.
Can you walk through the process of, you know, how do you determine, and I guess I'm looking at 2021 and it may be a long tunnel, but I think there's some light at the end of it and some semblance of normalcy maybe in the next 6 to 12, 18 months. How are you strategically deciding, okay, I am going to move forward with the gaming event, the gala, whatever other types of events you want to do during the year, but making a decision so it's not last minute to either be virtual or kind of a hybrid?
Right now we are actually right in the midst of budgeting, which I know is everyone's favorite time. And we're planning for our primary scenario as the in-person gala. And okay. Then secondary scenario of the virtual gala. So we are planning for both scenarios simultaneously. We have sort of an internal cutoff of when we're planning to make that final call. But as of right now, the work that is being done is towards that primary scenario of being in person. Okay. I think that there'll be challenges if it is able to be in person, just making sure mm-hmm. that everyone feels safe and comfortable as we do get back into the swing of doing these larger scale in-person events. But I am up for that challenge and hopeful that we can have that happen.
Good for you. Good for you. Any pressure from volunteer staff to, you know what, we just need to do it. It has to be in person.
No, actually. I think that with the success that we had with last year, especially, we now have sort of a track record that we can do this virtually. It's not what we're hoping for, but we think that we can still be completely successful. Last year for our fundraising, we raised as much, actually a tiny bit more than we had for our previous in-person fundraising gala. And that was a good gala fundraising year in 2019. So to be able to keep those sponsors and donors engaged with the foundation, I think we have a good track record with that and would be able to continue that going forward if it did move virtual again.
What are, would you be willing to share some of the kind of, from a skill set perspective, how to keep sponsors and even, I guess, some attendees involved now that it's not an in-person type event? And I would think that that's a challenge. Maybe it's not, but easy transition?
Well, certainly keeping them up to date with everything that was going on last year and making sure that they knew as quickly as possible how we were handling things and why we were making the decisions that we were making. I think foundation-wide, we also did a really good job of keeping the foundation's mission top of mind and relevant during a pandemic where most people's minds are on that as sort of the first mm-hmm. priority, because people were missing screenings. Obviously, the cancer diagnosis and the cancers being detected, that's not going away. That cancer still exists.
Unfortunately, right? Yeah. Hmm.
So making sure that people still understood how important the mission was. And we did create a Back on the Books campaign to get people back to their screenings, getting those rescheduled, and just altering our strategies a little bit to make sure that people knew we still needed them to be there.
Right. What, if you're willing to, some of the larger challenges you find scheduling and setting up these kind of events in the midst of COVID, are there some things that are now harder than they might have been in the past and kind of vice versa?
I do think that, I mean, especially in terms of scheduling, having those dual options certainly makes it more difficult. We also, just speaking of scheduling, last year for our gala, we had our MC have to back out about 2 days before the virtual gala was taking place due to illness. So they weren't able to travel, and we had to then find a replacement within about 2 days. We did, and it went smoothly. I think having a really strong script together and having had a tech rehearsal full run through the week before was very key in making sure that things did run smoothly the week that we did our live stream of our virtual gala. But that was certainly an example of people are their movement is not necessarily as free as it once was when travel is concerned, and trying to get everyone to one place for, even if it's a small amount of people, can still be very difficult.
Absolutely. Have you attended any virtual events outside of Prevent Cancer Foundation events, and any, did you glean anything out of it, or has it all been kind of the same? And
so I have attended a few virtual galas, partly, you know, to get a look at the competition. But I think that there are certainly a lot of similar elements that are in those pieces. I mean, honestly, you're putting together basically an hour and a half long variety television show for these virtual galas. So there's a lot of similar elements that you're going to see, and just trying to make it as smooth and engaging as possible. I have also personally attended some other virtual events. There was a virtual comedian magician that I attended.
How was that?
It was fantastic, actually. It really was.
All right. Are there some things we should be staying away from in our virtual kind of landscape, our virtual theater?
I think keeping things to smaller, more manageable, like easy to consume bits is definitely better, and being cognizant of the length of time. There were events that were in that 45 to hour mark that I think that's sort of the sweet spot.
That's
when you get to like an hour and a half, an hour 45 or longer than that, that it's hard for these virtual events to keep people's attention. It just is.
I'm trying to go back to when I attended your gala. Was it live or was it recorded? Because I've done both, and I love the recorded because I was able to pause and get a glass of wine, or the dog was barking, it didn't matter.
It was a combination. So we had pre-recorded segments that were sent in by talent. So we had speeches from people like Ernie Hudson talking about the importance of screenings. And we had musical performances that were pre-recorded. All of that was pre-recorded. And then we had our MC who was live, as well as our founder who did an introduction for
the evening. So Bo was live.
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. Good stuff.
Yep.
If you had to pick something to do over again, is it the 5K? Is it the gala? Is it the gaming? What would you put all your energy into, and what would you recommend other organizations put their energies into?
Well, I think that the gala, certainly in terms of return, like the amount of effort that we put into that was definitely seen. The gaming, again, that's a beneficiary event. So we're not necessarily putting on all of the planning. We're certainly contributing to that. We've actually had smaller gaming beneficiary events that we've been storing over the years as well. We had one that last year it had raised around 9,000, and this year it raised nearly 20,000. So keeping that sort of audience pool engaged with us has definitely been very helpful and lucrative in terms of fundraising. And the 5K, I think that our virtual 5K this year did well. We raised, in terms of a net fundraising, we raised nearly the same that we raised for our in-person event, since there's a significant decrease in the expenses that you're having for a virtual 5K.
Oh, all right.
But I do think that the sort of the secret sauce of making that as engaging as it possibly can be, that we haven't quite ticked that box 100% yet. We had a pretty decent registration, but there definitely could have been more. It certainly wasn't the level of registration that we have for the in-person event for the 5K.
Was the challenge just the platform or timing, not really knowing what to do, what people are going to kind of respond to?
Yeah, I think certainly figuring out what virtual 5Ks have been around for, for long since the pandemic. So that's not a new thing. I think for us, it was really finding the mind switch that the audience that's participating in a virtual 5K is not necessarily the audience that is participating in our in-person 5K. Because the audience that we had for this, in terms of repeat customers, we usually have a very strong repeat for the in-person event, and it was just not there at all.
So, all right. So, which is from a fundraiser perspective is exciting, because you just brought new people into the family. Yep. How do you, in a, again, a non-traditional world we're in now, how do you kind of keep those new folks engaged and steward them so they want to come back next year if it is kind of a either all back in person or virtual?
Well, we did, I mean, we did a custom welcome series for the individuals that were in our 5K audience. For next year, and this is another challenge, with the gala having moved from May to September this past year, we're keeping it in September. Mm-hmm. And with that being in September and our 5K normally falling in November, we just don't have the staffing resources to be able to do potentially two in-person events within a month and a half of one another. So that we're having to take a bye year and switch that to the spring, hopefully to be in person in the spring, not this spring, but 2022.
22? Wow. Yeah. Okay. I want to kind of stay on that. What is the staffing look like from a virtual events planning perspective? Do you need additional staff because you need more tech support? Do you outsource? What are some of the ways that an organization could kind of pull this off if they are? Well, in reality is a lot of not-for-profits don't even have the luxury of an event planner, and they kind of have to try to do it themselves or they outsource. Mm-hmm.
Well, for us, our staffing didn't necessarily change in terms of the planning between a virtual or a in-person event. In terms of the virtual events, I think we definitely had additional needs from our communications teams. So there was a little bit more of a burden on those staff members than there might have been for the in-person events. And then there were different vendors for the virtual events. So maybe not more vendors, but definitely different vendors. And then I think for the 5K, we also relied more heavily on our committee to help us with the audience generation for that. So we had a very strong group of cheerleaders that were helping to bring in new audiences for us.
Good. I have one question that I have to ask because it's been kind of irking me since I started working in not-for-profits way, way too long ago. But are there some things, some kind of final thoughts, some other, you know, aha moments that you better, that I better ask or you better share so people don't trip on some things that maybe you tripped on or?
I think it's just all about being as flexible and adaptable as possible.
Yes.
And I'm sure that others have said that too, but you just can't be stuck in one way of doing things because it's going to need to change. And sometimes that's really for the better. For example, our conferences, the engagement and attendance moving those virtual has more than doubled the audience for those events.
It's beautiful.
Yep.
All right. I have to ask this and you can dodge it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I get asked by every single client that I've ever partnered with, why do we do events? What is the reason behind it? So I want you to tell everybody why events are so, so important. And I have a newfound appreciation of them since the pandemic, but that's a different story. I want to know why everybody needs to be doing something virtual in today's world.
I mean, events are all about connection. That's, I think, why we do them, to get people talking in ways that they might not otherwise talk and bring new ideas to the table. And with virtual events, you still have to find a way to recreate that connection as much as possible. So that's really one of the more trickier things, is figuring out how to keep that connection going when you're not together. But it's doable.
Well, thank you. I have to be honest, this has been one of the more amazing conversations that I've had. So I am so appreciative of your time. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much.